Hello, everyone out there in podcast world. I hope you're having a wonderful day. You're listening to or watching the Service Business Mastery Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tersh Blissett, sitting virtually next to my co-host, Joshua Crouch. And for those of you who don't know about this podcast, it's a podcast focused on service business owners, managers, and technicians who are considering becoming business owners themselves. And our target and our goal with this show is to help answer some unasked questions. Today's episode is no different with that. We have Brigham Dickinson on the show today. He's a great guy, very smart guy. I've known him for years and years. We met at different events and conferences, and he actually has a company called Power Selling Pros. And while they're not a sponsor of the podcast, you probably hear us talk about it all the time because we at Service Emperor, we use Power Selling Pros, and they help our team, our office team, communicate better over the phone. And so Connor, I'll tell you a short story about Connor. She's a wonderful CSR of ours, and she is the first person that everybody meets whenever they meet Service Emperor. And whenever we first hired Connor, it was one of those situations where I had an amazing installation technician, and he loved our culture. He loved everything about Service Emperor. He just lived and died and just breathed Service Emperor everything. And we had a new technician come on, and that guy was screwing up a little bit. And Corey's, nah, that's not Service Emperor way. And he just would call him on it. And so I love that. And he came to me one day and said, hey, my wife, she's not happy where she's at, and she wants to make a career change. And I'm like, oh, here we go. I don't know about this. Hiring spouses, I don't think this is a good idea. And Josh and I even spoke about it a little bit. And it was one of those things where I was like, all right, let me meet her. Let's have a conversation. And I want to make sure that we understand if we have spousal drama stays at home. And they promised, they both, that we have a very open and honest conversation about it. And they're like, yeah, 100%. And to this date, I've never had any issues. And that's been like 2 years ago, I think. But one of the things about Connor is that she was never in our industry, even though Corey has been in our industry forever. She was never in our industry, and she didn't know the lingo. She didn't even have a background in answering the phones. She was actually a hostess at a local restaurant in Savannah. And so she had a great personality, but she was very young. And then she came on board, and I was like, man, I don't know. Like, I'm struggling with this because Julie, my wife, she's great on the phone. She's gone through all the classes. She went through Power Selling Pros courses and stuff, and she just picked up on it, and it was natural for her because she's also a nurse and she has that empathy. And I don't, we've determined that I don't either. I'm not empathetic. I try.
If we need to handle a customer that's a little angry, I don't handle it. Brittany does.
I need to be able to do it. I know that's something I need to work on as a person. But that's just not me. And Julie, that is Julie. And so whenever Connor needed help, I was like, I'm not the person to help you because I don't know the right answer to this, what's going on. And so we reached out to Power Selling Pros and brought them into the team. And golly, our technicians, they listen to the calls before they go on a service call. They'll listen to the recorded conversation between the client and Connor. And you can just listen to the guys that have been here for a long time. And they, from the time Connor started until the way she speaks now, oh my gosh, like, it's crazy the difference. And there was times when I'm like, Connor, I love you as a person, but I don't know if this is going to work because you're just too kind. And you're just, we got to get some of these objections handled before you just pass off the buck to somebody else, to a manager or something else. You need to be able to take authority with this conversation and stuff like that. And all I did was mention that one time to her coach. And then all of a sudden I'm getting these emails where they've gone through these in the coaching sessions, and I'm listening to recorded calls. And I don't know, this isn't an ad for Power Selling Pros. I just want to say that's the experience that I've had since using Power Selling Pros over the past 2 or 3 years, however long. I think it's been 2 years now that we've been using them. But today we're not talking about CSRs, really. We're talking about business owners. If you have questions about CSRs, I'm sure we'll get into a little bit, but don't hesitate to reach out to the team over there at Power Selling Pros. But we're going to talk about freedom over income, freedom over time, and freedom over anxiety and depression as a business owner. We deal with this.
And how to get through those three things.
Right. So it's not just
the end goal of the podcast.
Yeah. Not theory. That's, I love talking to people who have theories about things, but to actually talk about how to do implement these things, like that's where it's like, I watch a TikTok and they're like, this is what you need to do. They're like, oh yeah, that's great. We all do. We need to do that. But how are we going to do that? Anyways, Brigham has 5 points. He's got a new book out, Something to Give, A Journey to Become a Leader Worth Following. That's really true. And we've been talking for probably 30 minutes before we even started recording. So I know this is going to be a great episode, and just stick with us. If you have any questions and you're watching this live, don't hesitate to ask those questions and we will try and get in there as quick as possible. Our goal with the show is going to be to reach all 5 of the key points. If we're not able to do that, then we might have to have a part 2 of this episode, but I'm going to do my best not to ask too many questions because I know that can go into a rabbit hole there. But Josh, you want to add anything to that?
No, I every time we've hung out with Power Selling Pros, and every member of the organization I've ever interacted with has always been fantastic, which says a lot about the leadership. So I think there's going to be a lot of really good lessons that Brigham's, his other books have done really well. And,
by the way, I actually have a stack of his books.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is like his third book. Yeah, he's shaking his head.
Yeah.
So definitely Something to Give here, which is the title of the book. And I think just based on our pre-conversation, I think you guys will get a lot of value from this episode.
Yeah, 100%. Cool. Well, let's get started with the show.
Are you looking for valuable business advice to reach that 7-figure revenue mark? Do you want actionable tips to properly navigate through every business challenge you encounter along the way? Let Tersh Blissett and Josh Crouch be your guide in getting you to the top here at Service Business Mastery. Tune in as they sit down with world-renowned authors in business, leadership, and personal growth who share valuable insights about management, marketing, pricing, human resources, and so much more. Let their nuggets of wisdom gold guide you in owning a thriving, profitable, and ever-growing business. Here are your hosts, Tersh and Josh.
Hey, Brigham.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on, you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So for people who don't know who you are, can you do a quick introduction of yourself?
Yeah. So my name is Brigham Dickinson, owner of Power Selling Pros. Power Selling Pros has been around for almost 15 years. It started when I was broke in 2009, just off of a failed business. And I was kind of caught in my brother-in-law's basement and drew the first version of the Pattern for Excellence, right? That's the 8 principles we teach to help CSRs book calls, wow customers, and basically make sure that they're the only ones going out to the customer's home. And I didn't know that's what it was when I first drew it, but I had a client named Troy Nearings Plumbing and Heating here in Salt Lake City, Utah. And I was helping him out with some advertising. He said, Brigham, your leads are no good. I said, what do you mean my leads are no good? He says, oh, I just want a ballpark price. I just want to charge them out. I just want to talk to a technician. We can't book these leads. And I said, wait a minute. They're not calling because they want to. They're calling because they have to. They need your help. They just don't know the difference between you and the next guy slapping your price. And so whose job is it to help them feel differently? And then he realized, oh, wow, it's mine. I said, exactly. Let's train them. And I happen to have this crazy wheel I just drew up. And I can teach your team on how to book those calls. And so we increased his call conversions by 20% almost overnight with his calling on the team. And then he referred me to a guy by the name of Tom Robichaud in Boulder, Colorado, Precision Plumbing, Heating, and Air. And he said that he would pay me to train his team. He didn't want me to do his marketing for him at all. He said, hey, but I'll pay you to train my team. And so I was like, cool, let's do it. And so those two guys got together, and within about 2 months, they called me and got me on this call together. And they said, hey, Brigham, you're really good at what you do. And we don't think anybody does this in the industry. And we'd like to get you in touch with a guy by the name of Micah Gugliero at Gold Medal. And so the next thing I know, I'm working with Mike, and he's referring me to everybody left and right. Next thing, I'm hiring all my friends, and you guys, I don't have a lot of friends. They're all working with me, right? And so we all started pushing the envelope with CSR training. We've been doing it ever since. Today, we have over 1,000 trainees in our program, over almost 400 contractors nationwide that we work with regularly to help them book calls and wow customers in their call center.
I was reading that on your LinkedIn because I couldn't figure out what to put for like this episode on Facebook, because I didn't know exactly what we were going to talk about. So I went to your LinkedIn and I saw your about and I saw the story, like how you were doing advertising and ended up teaching them how to book more calls and stuff. I thought that was really interesting because it's funny because that was 15-ish years ago. Mm-hmm. And the industry as a whole today still has a massive issue here.
Yeah.
It's even though there's a lot more CSR coaching out there now, but there's still a massive hole in our industry for being better in this arena.
It's funny. So you mentioned Mike A. That's actually how we connected was originally. That's how I started using PowerSelling Pros was through Mike A. And he was like, you need to check these guys out.
How about that?
How about that? Small world.
Appreciate your business. Appreciate that you guys are working with us and support.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm one of those type people where I'll try a lot of things. Like Josh jokes about it. If you want to sell me something, just come on the podcast because I'll buy into it. But I'll cancel that thing too. If it's junk, and then I'll say, hey, look, this is junk. Like I tried it and maybe it's works for somebody, but it don't work for me. And this is definitely one of those things that has stuck with it. And it's one of those things whenever I was a service manager, I would sit back and I would listen to the dispatchers and they were always frazzled. Everybody was frazzled. They'd get phone calls constantly. They were not happy people because they were getting screamed at. And I just remember having to, when I was coaching them myself, how exhausting it was for me to coach them. So whenever I found out about PowerSelling Pros, I was like, oh yeah, and I don't have to do it. Sign me up.
That's the thing. That's the funny thing that we realized too, is that whenever a business owner goes to a class or a training, they're given all these cool things that they need to do.
Yeah.
Good luck with that. Because even if it's a good idea, they're so bombarded. The last thing they want is one more thing to do. And so when we realize
fire hydrant of just information coming at you.
Yeah. So when you offer to them something that they don't have to do, they tend to jump on that.
This right here, I will tell you, this has nothing to do with our show today, but this right here is what has saved me from that. These little strategy optimization cards. When I go to an event like that, I just write down the strategy and then I have them. I literally have like hundreds of them over here and I'll just, that way I don't get overwhelmed with all of that fire hydrant. But anyways, let's go.
It's going to blow your mind, Church.
See, there you go. Right there.
Like-minded people.
That's awesome.
Okay. So let's talk first about why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
I realized, let me take a step back. Last year I put a CEO in place, PowerSelling Pros, to run that organization. Mm-hmm. And side note, Zach Garcetti is a phenomenal leader.
We've had him on the show a couple times, actually.
Yeah, doing a great job.
Yeah.
And he's certainly a visionary as well, right? He's got ambitions of his own. And in fact, he's on his way to starting his own business, storytelling. So it's something that it's something I'm really excited about for him.
Brigham, I'm one of his clients.
Is that right? Super talented individual.
He is. He's very good.
And glad to have his influence on PowerSelling Pros and a couple of side companies that I'm working on as well. It's just good to surround yourself with good people. But when I put him in place, I essentially delegated every one of my responsibilities after Zach and was put in that position. And I found myself the day afterwards looking at the wall in my office.
Yep.
I went from crazy busy to nothing. Crickets. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Crickets. And this, for the last 20 years, what have I been doing? Well, I've been hustling, man. I've been working my tail off. There was no such thing as 40 hours a week. It was whatever it took, right? It was as many hours as it took. Mm-hmm. To do what I needed. I remember one time when I went to an event, I think it was a manufacturer event, and Buddy Smith, Russell's Heating and Cooling, saw me there, and he and I have become good friends over the years. And he says, Brigham, oh my gosh, you are everywhere. And that's true. That's totally true, except for home. I was never home, right? I was constantly moving, constantly shaking to get this thing going. And that's obviously what you've got to do in the beginning. But I was constantly proving myself to everybody I met. I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. And funny thing, anyone in this business or in business in general, that's what they're doing, is they're proving themselves, constantly proving themselves. But then I got to the point where I didn't have to prove myself at all. In other words, I had freedom over my income. I had freedom over my time. And I thought that's what I wanted. And I wanted it for about 48 hours before I started feeling some anxiety. Depression and anxiety. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And I realized that when you become a leader, it's less and less about something to prove. Because the problem with something to prove, that mindset, is that you're constantly having to prove something. If you're the one being the hero all the time inside your organization, guess what? Your team is always going to have to lean on you to get work done. They're always going to come to you to get things done. Great, you're the hero, right? You're the guy that solves all the problems, or the gal that solves all the problems. But in the meantime, you have talented individuals that are never given the opportunity to step in and do the work themselves. So instead of proving yourself, you've got to have the courage to step out of the limelight a little bit, let them step in. And then your next objective is to transition your mindset from something to prove to something to give. You've gained all this knowledge, all this understanding.
So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Because before we got started with this conversation, I prefaced Brigham with, this is going to hit home with me and Josh and I both, because we both are in a very similar situation like that, where we don't need anymore. And used to, we were motivated by that need. And I was motivated for years. If I don't go to work, I'm not going to make a paycheck. So then my mortgage isn't going to get paid, or my car payment's not going to get paid. And now it's to the point to where I don't have to get out of bed to make money. And as weird as that sounds, it's like I could stay in bed for 2 weeks and I would still make money. And how do I stay motivated? How do I not get depressed? Because over the period of, hey, Tony, by the way, Tony, one of my business partner and one of my guys out in the field, they're on live stream. And yes, I'm going to be talking about y'all today on this show. One of the things is I went through a bout of, I would say probably depression. It wasn't clinically diagnosed or anything, but definitely anxiety. Whenever I have to self-motivate, I have to motivate myself to get out of bed, not to make money, because that's not what I have to do to make money, but to just be a productive citizen in society is the best way to say it. Because Josh and I had this amazing plan last year where we're going to go to all the events and we're going to record 52 episodes. And then we don't have to live stream on Wednesdays anymore, because we have a production team who's paid for by our sponsors and our partners. And they're going to do all the actual work that Tersh used to have to do every single week to make sure the episodes get put out. And we're going to do this all in January and February. So then the rest of the year, we don't have to record anything. Well, guess what that does to Tersh? I don't have to get up and record anything. I don't have to get up and edit anything. I don't have to get out of bed and do the social media post anymore. Now we have full teams who do all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, all right, Tersh, what do you want to do today? Let's go ride side by sides. Okay, I did that yesterday. Let's go ride dirt bikes. Yeah, we did that already. Like, now it's like, all right, how do we stay motivated, and how do we get out of bed to go do things? Like, so I don't know. I just wanted to make sure that everybody listening knows that this is a very open book, and Tony would say, hey, come out here in the field and help me. And so I don't have to work much. And I do that also.
Tersh, do you find yourself, because obviously I know when you get busy, you go in the field. Do you find yourself sometimes when you don't have things to do, you're like, yeah, I'm just going to go jump in the field today?
Yeah, sometimes I do. But sometimes I've done it and then it messed up the flow of the work. Because
mm-hmm.
I'll go out in the field and I will screw everything up. And then I don't follow processes properly because yep. I'm not trained to do it. Like, I know the process from the office side of things.
Tony said, dang.
See, I know.
He agrees with you.
But see, like, even today, this morning I had to go run and drop off a package unit to Tony and JJ. And it was everything I could do to follow the process to be dispatched properly, to arrive properly, to leave properly. And it's just not something I do on a regular basis. So then I get out of the routine. I do it wrong. And then the team sees me doing it wrong. And so then it's, I can't keep doing this the wrong way. So why do it at all? And
so then you step back out.
And I step back out. Yeah.
And then you find something else that fulfills you.
Hopefully that's the goal. And that was the podcast for an extended period of time. And the one thing that fixed me years ago was Monday, learning how to say no, because full circle around this is the ego, getting the ego out of the situation. So you said you delegated, or you're working, you were able to get Zach to do everything. And
not Zach, but the entire team.
Right. Yeah.
He was the last piece.
But everybody relying on you for momentum. I think that's what happened. Okay. So that's what triggered this thought in my mind, is once I got to the point to where Tony became a business partner and people found the motivation from Tony and no longer needed me for the motivation, that I think is whenever I was like, pew, like, why, what's my, how do I stay motivated? Because I'm no longer the motivation for the team, or don't have to be the motivation for the team. I think that's where I'm at right now, is like, how do you stay? I know that we're going to talk about these 5 points and all of that, but that's me in a nutshell. Like, Tony's now a motivator. So the ego of me not being the motivator anymore is hit home.
And you're not the only one.
Yeah.
I know that. So I'm experiencing the same thing. We're in the same boat, and chances are there are a ton of listeners listening to this right now that have gone from multitasking, half listening, to completely listening and completely engaged. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
The short answer is that you should go to brighamdickinson.com and pre-order the book. It's coming out September 19th. And it's a short read. It's an easy read. You can read it in 2 days and you'll get all the answers you need. But let me just preface it with a short experience. So my wife's parents own apple and peach orchards, and they own them in Mexico. Okay, they live in an American colony, believe it or not. It's been there for years and years. And the story behind that is miraculous as well. Okay, everything about having an orchard, you guys, is a miracle. Okay, first of all, money does grow on trees. Okay, it absolutely does. Sometimes. And here's what I mean by that, is that there are times when the weather ruins their crop. Now, if they have a good year, and you guys, it is feast or famine in this business, okay?
Oh, yeah.
If they have a good year, they could do $500,000 a year, okay? And for one family to do $500,000, that's incredible, right? That's awesome, with awesome margins, right? So yeah. As long as the price is good for the peaches and the apples. And in fact, they're in the middle of a very good year. But over the last 3 years, they've only had one good year. So the first 2 years over the last 3 years have been completely destroyed by weather,
right,
and wind and rain, and I guess all those are included in weather. But hail, dude, hail is awful for peaches and apples. It'll knock those things.
Who would have thought?
I know. It's crazy. And all these things that, you know, that we just turn on our windshield wipers and get through it is absolutely devastating for them. And over the years, as they share these stories with me, every time I sit down, I find it so fascinating how they get through the hard times. And one of the things my mother, right, my wife's mother, side note, they expect me to call them mom and dad. It's hard for a 47-year-old to do that, but yeah, I do it.
I get it. I caught that, but I wasn't going to say anything.
Yeah. It's an expectation, and I love them and respect them, and so therefore
I get it.
What I'm told. But and you can tell how their culture is down there. But just great people, God-fearing people, because they absolutely have to be. They rely on the divine to help them through each season. But right. She said that during the difficult seasons, she finds the best way to overcome depression and anxiety is to stop thinking about herself and to serve her neighbors and her friends and her family. Now, wow. If you were to tell that to somebody who's suffering from depression and anxiety, they're going to tell you to go pound sand. Like, you're a freak.
Right. You're right? Sitting on my couch right now and you have depression. Don't think about yourself anymore. Just think about your neighbor.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not going to go over well.
That's not going to go over well.
Yeah. It's counterintuitive. But the fact of the matter is that's how she and her family have been able to get through the difficult times. This is to stop thinking about themselves. Incredible insight there. And from that moment, I just started thinking about, wow, all this time I've been proving myself, and that's worked for a time being. Yeah. But I'm also realizing how proving myself is keeping others from growing. I'm standing in the way from them growing and doing what I've been able to do. Oh, and true. So instead of continuing to prove myself, I need to now find fulfillment in giving, in serving, in sharing. And that's how I'll continue to find fulfillment and happiness in my life. And so what we've done, you guys, is we've just totally skipped the five steps and skipped to the end. And we can talk more about anxiety and depression towards the end of this. But I certainly want to talk about the five critical steps that need to be taken in order to experience freedom over income, which is great, freedom over time, which is even better, and then the most important thing, freedom over anxiety and depression by finding fulfillment in a role that...
So we had these 5 points. I know that you want to share on each of the points and then a little story on each point, and then we can discuss a little bit. You think we can still do that? You think we can fit that still in?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And as a side note, I can be on as many of these as you'd like in order to get it done. Hey, I'm all yours.
Okay, cool. So first off, let's start with point number one.
Yeah. So you might think this one's rudimentary, but let me preface it with an experience that I had. As soon as Zach Garside took over, not operations, but took over leadership, Lindsay Wood is over operations, and she's also a brilliant integrator type mind inside the organization here at PowerSelling Pros. But as soon as they started taking over and running the company, I got a phone call from a contractor, and he said, "Hey, I hear you've got some free time." And I said, "As a matter of fact, I do." And he says, "How would you feel about doing some ride-alongs with my technicians?" And I was like, "What do you have in mind?"
Yeah.
And he said, "Just do some ride-alongs." And the thing is they lack soft skills. I know that there isn't one listener that can relate to that concern about their technicians and having soft skills. And so I was like, "Sure, let's do it. Well, I ended up doing ride-alongs for 3 months, did over 50 ride-alongs. And after this, I learned so much, you guys.
Isn't it crazy how much you learn from a ride along? Like we were talking beforehand, like when you go and coach a technician out in like in a coaching environment in a warehouse or wherever in a classroom versus coaching a technician in their environment and their ride along. And not as a business owner, if you have a CRM and you think that you have set all these steps up, that they're going to follow this workflow and this chart and this workflow is going to work great. Until you've gone and done that ride along and done the workflow yourself, you can't understand the frustration that a technician has. Just a side totally note there.
Right. Well, I just think observing what really happens, because we have all these bright ideas as CEOs and founders and stuff like that. This is how it should be. This next great idea is going to change how your role evolves and all this stuff. And then you try to put it into play and it's not really that practical. We have all these great ideas, and they're just like, at the end of the day, they're not practical and they're not going to work in the real world.
But you learn how comfortable the technicians are within their own skin as well.
Yeah. I mean, you put them in a class, they're definitely out of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
The reason why they got into this business is so they can work with their hands. They are experiential learners, right? They are hands-on learners. And so when you get them comfortable in their element, it's amazing what you can learn about them as well as about the industry. And so my eyes were opened. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Look, when it comes to a call center, I know what to do. I've been doing it for years. In the field, one of the very first things I learned was I was one of 5 bids on my second phone call. And I didn't sell anything. Dude, I feel like I can sell ice to Eskimos.
You're right.
Freak. How did I not? So I started thinking about that. And finally, I called the owner. I said, "Look, I'm not going to go on another phone call." He said, "What's going on? Why isn't it?"
Oh, another service call.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to go on another service call. Exactly. Until your call handling team is making sure I'm the only one going out. And he's, "How can I guarantee that?" I said, "Dude," and his name's Rob. I said, "Rob, Valley Plumbing, by the way, awesome guy. Great company. Rob, we've been doing this for 15 years. Your team needs to be trained and held accountable on a regular basis so that by the time the call is over, they feel like they're done shopping. They, meaning the homeowner, they're done shopping. They don't want to go anywhere else because of the amazing experience they just had over the phone. People don't want five bids. They have to have five bids.
That's what we're told.
So all we need to do is create such an amazing experience over the phone so that I'm the only one going out. So once that understanding between Rob and I was made, there was a much, much bigger difference for me from there on out. When I first started working with his technicians and teaching them these soft skills, they were doing about $500,000 a month in revenue, gross service call revenue, okay? At the end of the three-month period, they were doing over $700,000 a month just with soft skills.
And they're not having to make return trips after they won the bid or not win the bids or whatever.
That's right. And the way that I went about it is I didn't sit there and observe the technician. That's what better way to make them nervous and not be successful.
Oh, right. Watch you over your shoulder.
Yeah. Instead, I just said, hey, we're tag teaming. We're gonna talk to the customer together. We're going to interact with the customer together. We're going to create safety, an environment of safety, an environment of comfort, and have a little bit of fun. And the way that I get the technician's attention is I simply say, hey, look, how did you get kissed on the first date? It's amazing how they all go, whoa, what's happening? How do I do that? It's simple. You've got to create an environment of safety, comfort, and have a little bit of fun. In that environment, you're going to be very successful on that first date.
Yeah.
Okay? Same thing inside the customer's home. If in the, right from the get-go, if you can create safety, an environment of safety, okay, where they're comfortable and they're having a little bit of fun, guess what? You're going to be very successful in offering your services and your products. Why? Because you have the freedom to be curious, take a look around the home, find out what's happening, I mean, far above and beyond what you're initially called out for, right?
Right.
And then you provide options. And then you, as you provide those options, they already like you. They're already having fun. So now they're in a buying environment. They're not feeling like they're being sold. And you simply get to a yes or no. Just say, hey, here are the options. Which one do you want? Yes or no? And you move on from there. Yeah. No selling required. Now, when you go, you approach it that way with technicians, holy crap, it changes everything for them. So the point that I'm making here is that as I did this over 3 months, I was able to go back to Rob and say, Rob, this person is a leader. He's being underutilized. That person over there, that person that I've been working with, is an absolute go-getter. Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got to make sure that you put him in a place where he can make an actual difference for this organization. And so I learned something. You go to an event and everybody says, hey, you need to work on your business instead of in it. Yep. Nobody teaches you how to do that.
Right.
And so while I was doing these ride-alongs, I began to realize, holy cow, this is how you do it in our industry. The way that you do it is you actually sit down with your office staff, and you spend time with them, right? And I'm getting into the third step. I'm getting ahead of myself. But the bottom line is you want to discover talent amongst the ranks of your team and make sure you put them in positions of power that can actually make a difference inside your organization. Before I get too far ahead of myself, you guys have any questions or comments on the one I covered so far?
No, I'm just taking notes.
Okay. So step one, to be clear, is to make sure you're the only one going out. The best way I've found to do that is have an outside company, an outside source that just gets it done for you. Okay. I realize I'm being self-serving here, but the fact matters is that it works. It works. I've been doing it for 15 years. You just need to do it. You've got to put your technicians and your comfort advisors.
Set them up for success.
Yeah.
And so let me ask you this, Brigham. What happens if you're that size company where you don't have a CSR yet? Or you're thinking about getting a CSR, or you need a CSR.
Yeah. So if you go to BrighamDickinson.com, my first book, Pattern for Excellence, it's the orange one.
Yep.
If you do not have a CSR yet, get that book. It'll teach you everything we teach, or at least everything we taught 8 years ago when I wrote it.
Yeah. So, wow. 8 years ago. I can't believe it's been that long.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, so definitely get the first book, and you can learn the soft skills, and you'll find that there are ways to apply them with the technicians that you're and comfort advisors that you work with as well. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. How important? I know you got a little bit of bias there. how important is hiring a CSR? Like, how quickly should that be done? Do we need to be doing that? If you're an owner operator in the field and you have one other technician, should you already have a CSR? Or is it whenever you come out of the field, you should hire a CSR? Or maybe as you're like me and you're not the best CSR because of your personality, you should hire one faster than what someone who is a great CSR.
Yeah. So let's say that you're a business owner that is still in the field and that you're answering your cell phone, right? In between calls or what have you. I would absolutely get a CSR because it's a whole lot better than you cherry picking every call that comes in.
Yeah. And so one of the things as an owner who did work in the field before.
Yeah.
A CSR's job is to say yes and book the call. And as a business owner, if I'm in the field and I'm like, oh man, I don't really feel like doing this right now. Mm-hmm. Then it's, I don't know if I'm going to be as motivated to book that call as I would if that was my job to book the call. And then the dispatcher or whoever else had to figure it out later.
And what we see, and we have a team that listens to our clients' calls that we track. They're answering them while they're in the attic, or they're in the basement, or they're on the road and the truck in the background is making all that noise that a truck makes on the highway. It's awful. Like, you can hear it. And I'm like, God, this is terrible. No wonder you can't book calls and why these things aren't working. Like, it literally needs people to, I don't know why. And it's just this way. It's been this way for as long as I've been in the industry. CSR position is always extremely undervalued. It still feels that way. It feels like we are making progress, but again, all these new business owners that come in, they just don't get it. So it continues this cycle of, I got to hire more techs first so I can get out of the field. Then I'll hire a CSR. I answer the phone, so it's no big deal. It's, you suck at answering the phone.
The thing about,
you're not the right person for it.
I believe the benefit that a business owner, and this is me personally, my personal belief, I believe that when we as a business owner are successful at booking calls, it's because they're talking to the owner of the company, mm-hmm. not because we have amazing CSR skills. That's just me personally.
The thing about when is a good time, you've got to decide.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious. There's more behind that chuckle there. Tell me more, Tersh.
No, I believe that there are times where I go out and sell. I'm not a salesman. Brigham, you are a salesman. You are a great salesman. You have a great personality for salesman. I am very much not that at all. But I still sell. Like, my closing rate is very good. And I truly believe that it's because they have the perception that I'm the business owner and I can make things happen. Whenever I go in and close deals for more than a technician closes or a comfort specialist closes the deal, promise less than they promise, and the customer is 100% happy and satisfied, and it blows my mind. Because I underpromised and overdelivered and got way more money, or I'd say percentage wise, more money for the work that was done. And the comfort specialist was constantly asking for discounts. Can I give them a discount because I can't close this deal? Our margins are getting super tight and all this other stuff. And I believe it's because they just had the perception that since I'm the business owner, then it's going to be like, you're good. We
you're right.
We believe you.
You're right. But you are selling. Look, listen, you're selling yourself short right now. You're saying you're not a salesman. Whatever.
Right.
Believe me, I say the same thing, Brigham. And I've been working to remove myself from sales here because my process is, I'll leave a PG. It's crap.
Good call.
And it only works because, like, I feel like people, they see me. Yeah. So you're the face, you're the voice, you're the everything.
Of course.
And I don't have a repeatable process, which of course doesn't allow for that freedom, right? Or it doesn't allow for some of these other steps and some of these other things to happen, which I realize and I want to move towards. But to Tersh's point, I do feel like that sometimes. Yeah, they know that I'm super knowledgeable and I know that I'll take care of the problem. So they're going to sign with us because they're comfortable that way. But it wasn't because of my sales prowess.
It's because of your confidence.
That's probably true. Cause I know what happens on the back end. Just like Tersh knows, hey, I know we're good at installing this stuff. Like, you won't have any problems if you work with us. And that confidence gets exuded when he talks.
You got it. Okay, self-confidence is what we want to train every one of our employees to have. And you only gain that with experience and time and training. But it's self-confidence, it's self-reliance, and service-mindedness. Those happen to be the three purposes of power selling pros. And so, yeah, it's easier for the business owner to make sales because he or she comes across with a lot of confidence.
Can you, do you feel like, okay, so this is my last question on this point, because we're still on really technically number one. What happens in the meantime, like how long does that process take to change? If you're using power selling pros, not using power selling pros, getting to be that, the only person that arrives at the home. And also, let me, just for the listeners who are listening, because number one might not make as much sense as, say, number five, like what I'm working on. And confirm number one of the 5 points and how that is actually going to help us achieve that power over the freedom over these three things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, total. So the technician needs to be set up for success. The comfort advisor needs to be set up for success. If you do not do that, it's going to affect their confidence. Okay. If one or two of my phone calls every day is me being a bid, that means I am a number, right? I'm a commodity. I'm dispensable, basically. I feel like I'm on a street market hoping that somebody buys my discounted rug. That is not how we want to set up our technicians and our comfort advisors.
No.
Okay. Instead, we want them to feel like they're coming into a Nordstrom's, right? The store, right? The store to go into.
Okay. So how do you experience that without going to Nordstrom's, or if you've never stayed at a Ritz, how do you say, let's provide the Ritz experience to someone who has never experienced the Ritz?
Yeah. So that's where the pattern for excellence comes in.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? Sorry, I gotta share a really quick story. This is a really cool place in Arizona. It has a really awesome history here that I took my wife to for our anniversary in June. And literally, it's one of those like all-inclusive places. And honestly, I've never really spent a lot of time in places like that, say the Ritz level thing. I'm usually like, I'll just stay at whatever hotel. I don't really care. Like, some of that stuff doesn't really
it's gravitate kind of scary to me. Because whenever I go with Josh, he's like, no, this place is fancy. And I'm like, no, this place is not fancy. This is like giving me the creeps right now, John.
Very simple. I don't need a lot of extravagance, but we went to this place. It's Castle Hot Springs in Arizona. So anyone that's in Arizona is familiar with it. Really cool history of the who's who of people back in the early 1900s visit this place because of like the magic healing of the spring, hot spring and stuff. But literally when you experience something that has that level of that customer experience, it's literally something that you will never escape your mind, because every single employee was like the happiest person I've ever talked to over and over. Like, they remembered every single thing I told them about the reservation. It was our anniversary. Everybody greeted us and knew it was our anniversary. Like, it was just the most amazing. Everything was laid out for you. They knew when you were away from your room, so they came and put new stuff in your room. It was like just the wildest thing you could ever imagine. But having that experience, I do feel like sometimes it's harder to teach an experience if you haven't actually physically experienced it, if that makes sense.
And if the environment's not there, in other words, in your place of business, they're not going to be motivated to do it anyway. But why? Because it's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's a lot. I can only imagine how much work it took to build something of that level of value. But it was like, now this is like a $1,500, $1,800 a night place. This is not a cheap place. This is not a place you go to just sit in the hotel.
At the exact same time, like, that experience level, I think, is a conversation with the CSR dispatcher, your office team, the people at the front line, the people that see, like, that I feel is very much that conversation. I think the Nordstrom conversation would relate better to technicians and comfort specialists, especially if they, which I've experienced, everybody's experienced this. I know you have technicians selling based on their checkbook. So if they're like, hey, I don't have $1,500, I'm not going to recommend a $1,500 repair. You know what I mean? Or I can fix it myself. But you go into a Nordstrom and like, I've gone into Nordstrom the first time I ever went. Like, I live in small town South Georgia. Okay, there's not Nordstrom's in South Georgia. We have Walmart. Like, that's what we have, and so that's what most people relate their experiences to. And sometimes you get the fancy Walmart. And so that's it. And so the first time I experienced a Nordstrom's was in Columbus, Ohio. And I was by myself because my wife was on her annual tours there for the Air National Guard. And so I was just visiting Columbus. I was a tourist there. I walk into a Nordstrom's and I'm like, this is really nice and spacious and this is my kind of people right here. Cause like, I'm South Georgia and I wear a 3-piece suit every single day and people look at me like I have 4 heads. And so when I go and visit something like that, then it's like, all right, I can fit in with these people. And the way that I felt there was, yeah, those shoes were $800, but I could see myself buying those shoes, even though I could probably Google them and find them cheaper somewhere else. And all of that good jazz, which is the exact experience that we deal with as technicians. But if just the fact that I walked in there and overwhelmingly felt comfortable and they were there to help me and support me and make sure that I felt comfortable. And they gave me advice the whole time. They were like, you probably want this like size 11 wide because your foot, let's actually measure your foot and let's put it, not one of those metal things that are uncomfortable, but let's actually go through this whole process. And then it's, wow, like I've never spent more than $100 on a pair of shoes. And here I am spending $2,500 coming out of this store. And as our consumer, that's the exact same experience that we should be providing for them. But I've never taken one of my technicians to Nordstrom's and showed them that experience. So like, how can I tell them, hey, let's give them the Nordstrom experience if I've never done that. And this is not what today's episode is supposed to be about, but of course it is. I want to say there's so much that you're talking about, even in this first point here, that we fail at. I fail at constantly. I used to do what I thought was a great job. And I believe that we provide better service. We have the capability to provide the best service in Savannah. But I know for a fact that we've failed recently just because of not staying consistent with implementation.
And you've nailed it. The fact of the matter is, and we're all saying the same thing, right? Because of the amount of effort and time it takes to make sure your technician department and your comfort advisor department is running the way that those two departments should run, it just makes the most sense to have somebody else handle the call center.
It does.
Handle it. Make sure that we're the only ones coming out and let us do the rest. And that's basically what we're getting at here.
Yeah.
And it's okay that it's taken this much time to get there. This is step one, and you cannot skip this step.
Right.
Please make sure you show that you respect and honor the time of the technician and his or her expertise by making sure they're the only ones going out, period.
So what about a CS? What do you say? What would you tell a business owner or service manager there, the amount of time each technician should be allowed to have for a job? Do you think that they should limit to 4 or 5 calls a day? And you set that with the CSR?
Yes. Yeah, the reason why this is important is because we, in order to create safety, comfort, and fun, you've got to have time to do that. Okay, and I don't want to just go out and look at the situation itself that I've been called out to do.
Yeah.
I want to be able to create the right environment with a homeowner and then take care of everything that I can take care of while I'm there. Is that not great customer service?
That's, yeah, 100%.
And look, the minute you say, technicians, I want you to sell, you're done. It's over.
Yep.
Pack up your bags, go home, because their brains are turned off.
But how do you motivate them to sell? Because without using the word sell, because a business has to sell. You have to sell to stay in business. Mm-hmm. But if you use the word sell, then
you're toast.
We turn our brains off as a technician.
Yeah. See, because technicians don't want to be salespeople. So instead, right, Here's what you do. You do the same thing we do in the call center. In the call center, we say, guys, we don't want you selling. We just want you to provide a phenomenal customer experience. Okay, so under the guise of phenomenal customer experience, you guys, this isn't a trick. It's the truth. You actually feel more fulfilled when you're taking great care of people, when you're serving people, when you're more service-minded, you're more fulfilled. And so basically, essentially, what we're talking about is, hey, what we've been able to do for the last 15 years in this industry with the call center, with your call center, you can essentially do with technicians as well. So here's what you do with the technician. You say, look, all I want is for you to be curious. In fact, you take, you basically feel, help them feel extremely uncomfortable. The first thing you say is, guys, I don't want you to sell. And they're like, what's going on? I don't want you to sell. Instead, I want you to be curious. Okay, be curious about what's going on inside the home and how you can positively affect what's going on inside the home so they're more comfortable and they feel safer and so on and so forth. See, those are our goals, safety, comfort, fun, safety, comfort, fun. So we focus on that. We stay curious. Guys, there have been times where the technician and I were called out to look at, I think it was a washer and dryer. And we don't even really do that, right? But we were looking at it and I was going, while we were there, by the time we're done, it probably took 2 hours, but we were doing plumbing work, we were doing heating and cooling work. It was a $100 job that turned into basically a $50,000 job. Why? Because we were curious about what was going on. We provided options based on our curiosity, and we asked the customer to get to yes or no. Just get to yes or no. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Curious, options. Get to yes or no. Customer says yes, great, you do the work. Customer says no, great, you don't do the work. No selling required.
All right, so let me tell you, let me ask this then. How, as a personal experience, because I know that there's different ways of doing this, you could, I want to know how to keep those people motivated, the service experts, your service technicians, keeping them motivated to do this on the call, because they see they have three calls on the board. They could knock them all out and be done at lunchtime or spend this time. I know there's several people who are like, all right, pay them a certain way and then they'll stay motivated. So you can pay them a commission or pay them spiffs. But then other people are like, well, that turns into dishonesty. And for me, I think you have to, you can't delegate the management of the technicians. You still have to have that. You still have to manage every technician, no matter how you pay them. But I guess, how have you found success keeping the guys motivated and gals motivated in the field to provide that experience? Is it the dopamine drip that they get whenever they've seen that reaction where you provide the service?
Yeah. Yeah. So once again, what we've been teaching CSRs, dispatchers, lead coordinators for 15 years, to help them find that dopamine drip when the customer says, you are amazing. This is amazing, right?
Yeah.
We do the same thing with the technicians. Let me tell you a quick experience. So I was with a technician here in Salt Lake City, Utah. And we go down, it was a no AC, right? No cooling, super hot day. We went downstairs, we took a look at the furnace, took a look at the filter. It looks like they recently switched out the filter. We asked the customer about the filter and they switched out right before we came because they didn't want us to see the dirty filter. I thought that was really funny. But
apparently we see that old
filter. Yeah, the old filter had been there for the last 2 years or what have you, and they were really embarrassed. And
with the date on it, that's 2 years old.
Yeah. So we check out the furnace first. We go upstairs, we take a look at the thermostat, and I see that the gauge is on the off position. So that we were called out for a no AC. And so of course, you guys have probably been here 1,000 times. I go, click. Yeah. And then it turns on. Then we go outside, we take a look at the condenser, we clean it up, make sure it's running the way that it should. We go back in, we sit down, and I'm sitting with the technician, and we're talking about a regular tune-up, we're talking about air purification, and so on and so forth. And then the customer asked us point blank, and the customer said, guys, what really was it? Why wasn't this air conditioner working? And the technician looked at me, because he didn't know what to say. So he looked at me and I said,
you don't want to lie. Yeah. You don't want to lie at all.
You got it. So at the same time, without hesitation whatsoever, I looked at her and I said, it was most likely because of a user error. And the technician was floored and the customer was, oh shoot. I was concerned that maybe I didn't use it the right way. And she ended up buying regular tune-ups, regular service agreement. She was even thinking about buying air purification systems. Why? Because she's got a couple of dogs in the house and so on and so forth. Why was she in a buying mode? Because I never let her feel like I was trying to sell her on anything. I was there to provide the truth. as there to provide service. And as soon as I walked out of that house, I gained complete respect from the technician, where he said, "That was amazing. You just told her the truth." And I said, "Yeah, bro, we're not about selling. We're about providing a phenomenal customer experience." And he's just like, "I get it. It's so simple." And I said, yeah, it's simple. You just take great care of the customer, you provide an awesome customer experience. And it changed his life.
Yeah. I'd love to check in with him in a year or two or something like that and see his thoughts on that and stuff.
That's an awesome story. It's so true, because I feel like there's an abundance now, and maybe there's not an abundance because there's always could be coaches and consultants stuff, but there's a lot of sales training gurus out there. But again, they're always focused on like these fancy objections and like how to handle it. Like, it's, if you tell people the truth, people can spot
the honesty,
genuine and honest.
And they can spot the opposite too.
Oh yeah. They can spot when you're trying to sell them, and they can spot when you're just actually trying to help them. And even if you're not, let's say, because we talk about sales skills, right? Like, Tersh and I are like, we can't sell it well, but they trust us,
right?
Because we tell them the truth. Mm-hmm. And that's really the difference.
I think that's what there's a scale of sales skill, like a balance and like a little, I don't know, a graph that you could look at. And it's like sales skill versus brutal honesty. And it's which way you lean. I think I successfully sell because of brutal honesty more so than the sales skill side of things. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's,
I just wish as an industry we could just focus on just give the honest truth and try, and just make, if you're already there for a call where the switch needed to be turned on, see if you can clean out the AC, see if you can help them with something else. You're already there. You already got
time. That's the other thing. Don't just turn on the switch and then leave.
Yeah.
That's the problem. It's a $79 service fee. I flipped the switch for you. Someone's still going to be pissed that you charge them $80 for to switch it, to flip it. Even if they made a mistake, like, give them something. Like you said, I love the line, be curious.
Be curious.
What else is going on? Mm-hmm. What else can we help with today? Like, we're already here. You have my full attention. And I have a couple hours blocked for this call. So what else can we help you with today since I'm already here? I love that.
Let me just say this. And I've done this in Utah. I've done it in California. I've done it in Arkansas. I've been doing it all over the country. Hundreds of technicians so far, just because it's super fun. The thing that I find most fulfilling about it is that technicians, these guys, by and large, there's a few jerks here and there, right? But by and large, these guys are the best people. The greatest
people. Wholesome-hearted people.
I'm talking, salt of the earth type of people.
Yep. And especially my guys. If y'all are still watching this, listening to this, y'all are the best people. Absolute best people.
Kind-hearted people. The last thing we want to do is give them the impression to not be who they naturally are.
Yeah, 100%.
If we can direct them in the right way, lead them in the right way, I promise you, you will never have a want for income or money ever again. You just got to channel that goodness of theirs and help them see that it's all about phenomenal customer service. And sales, the sales will take care of itself.
So really fast, Josh got a little.
When do you want me on again, Tersh? We obviously just went through.
We obviously got to do this again. Yeah. So really quick, just so that people know the 5 points, can you just go through them? And then we're going to explain in more detail the other ones, because that point one is great. And we spent an hour almost talking about point one. But the thing as a business owner, point two, I think is more important than one's obviously the most important. Because you gotta get started there. But I want to make sure that people do come back and listen to the other 4 points, because they are very important to me anyways.
Yeah. Okay. A vision. Point number two is a vision needs to be set. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by vision is that every person on your team, every player on your team needs to know that thing that is bigger than them, bigger than any one individual, that's motivating them to get out of bed every day. So So they need to believe in what they're doing, something that's bigger than themselves. And they also need to believe in the person that's leading them. So believe in what they do and believe in the person that's leading them. Those two things. And you're right. We could spend an entire podcast on that.
Yeah.
The third one is taking time with each member of your team and discovering their strengths as well as dreaming with them as far as where they see themselves inside the organization in 3 to 5 years. Once you've done that, number four is to begin to delegate and offload each of your responsibilities to each of those players.
But the only way that you can do that is by what?
Two things. The office staff, you've got to meet with them, right? Mm-hmm. With the field staff, you've got to meet them in the field, right? To ascertain their strengths and their talents. But then you've got to write down everything you do, put them on a sticky.
I think that's the challenge right there. That when you stop and write down everything that you do, you talk about someone who actually might be experiencing some sort of anxiety. That just amplifies some anxiety, because as a business owner, especially if you're struggling at any point, if you're dealing with any of the depression or struggle and you're writing down what you're doing, sometimes it's like, all right, my list isn't very large. Why am I depressed? Or this list is so massive, I don't know where to start with what I'm writing down, what I'm doing all day, every day. And the fact that I love what you talk about with the sticky notes and stuff, and we can go into more detail about that later. I think that visualization with the sticky notes and that being there every day reminds you as a business owner how many hats you wear. Even if your job is one thing, you might be doing something else that's somebody else's job as well that they really should be doing. And it might make you realize how much you're doing that you shouldn't be doing as a business owner too.
That's right. You'll probably have 25 things that you do on a regular basis. The reason why you spend 80 hours a week doing endless amounts of tasks, and you're asking yourself the entire time, why am I doing this? This is not the reason why I started my business.
Yep.
And you're right, but you don't know how to get out of that hole. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to wait for that podcast that we do, just go to brighamdickinson.com and buy the book. Right? It'll take you step by step how to do it, how to get to a 20-hour work week. Can you imagine a 20-hour work week instead of 80?
Right.
It's step by step how to do it. So that's the fourth step. And then the fifth step is, okay, cool. Now that I've gained freedom over my income and freedom over my time, how do I keep from getting depressed with nothing to do? You transition your mindset from a something to proof mindset to something to give. And obviously the book will help you out with that as well, but we should definitely talk about three specific things that can help you. And that includes financing options, service agreements, and getting customer feedback on a regular basis. So as a business owner, you should be focused on customer acquisition, customer retention, and customer experience. And we can talk an entire podcast about that as well. And of course, at some point we'll summarize on how to completely beat or at least taper feelings of depression and anxiety at the same time.
Yeah, that's how long you think it would take to have that conversation? We should probably wait for that, huh?
We could talk a little bit about it now. If you, how much time do you have,
Touch on it. Let's touch on it.
Okay. So let me, again, in the beginning of this podcast, we talked about the fact that as soon as I offloaded everything, I started feeling really depressed and anxious, right? Because I went from the guy to not the guy. That's really hard.
The hero to zero complex.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. And this is why it's so important. One of the key characteristics of a leader or in general is basically an ability to get back up after you've been knocked down.
Yeah.
We should know as business owners better than anybody, having been knocked down 1,000 times, how to get back up. So the quicker we get back up, the less residual damage in the interim. And so we've got to get very good at getting back up. And so I found, based on the same conversation we had in the beginning from my mom in Mexico, that the minute you start turning outward and serving your team, serving your people, that's the fastest road to happiness. Counterintuitive, but that's the way it works. Now, I do have one tool. If we've got time for it, I'll go over it.
Yeah,
if not,
yeah,
absolutely. Next time. Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
So the tool is an acronym, and the acronym is STOP, S-T-O-P, STOP. And the reason why the acronym is STOP is because our goal is to stop our racing mind. See, when we're not doing things, that doesn't mean our mind has stopped. Our mind is moving. And especially a business owner's mind, it is moving at Mach 20, right?
That's why you can't sleep at night.
Yes. Okay. This, if it's left untamed, will drive a person absolutely bonkers. And so the way that you stop your racing mind, S, is smile. Okay. Choose to smile, right? And this is a whole lot more than just being positive. My goal here is for you to recognize that moments are all around you. Moments you can win, moments you can positively affect. And just because you've offloaded all of your tasks that you're doing, you should still be recognizing other moments that you can win, that you can positively affect. And so the first thing you should do is smile, because they're there. And all you need to do is realize that it is showtime.
Yeah.
It is always showtime. You just need to recognize that it's showtime. Recognize that you're in that moment so that you can positively affect it, especially with your family, with your team, with your spouse, as a neighbor. It's showtime, bro. You need to smile. Get that frown off your face. Smile. That's number one, okay? Number two, time. You still have complete control of your time. Now, you can decide inside your head where you spend your time. You can spend your time in the future. You can spend your time in the past. Or you can choose to be right here, right now. Because right here, right now is the only moment that you can affect. So be here now. Be present in this moment. Stop. Get out of the future. Get out of the past. Oh, the good old days when I was doing all the work. Stop it. Be here now. Okay, that's number two. Number three, opposition. Guess what? In this life, it's always going to be there.
Yep.
Always. Accept it. Choose to learn from it. Take what you can learn. Flush the rest. Get rid of it.
Don't live in that past and just think about that and just begrudgingly think about the opposition constantly. That's one of the biggest things that really freed me up several years back was I used to worry what the competition did. I would just constantly like, what are they doing? How can I do it better? What are they doing? How can I do it better? Once I got freedom was whenever I was like, I'm going to make the best version of me. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be better than the competition. And I don't care what the competition is doing.
You got it. You can't control them anyway. Control is yourself. So you've nailed it. We spend time stewing over our failures.
Yeah.
And it destroys us. Just that stewing can really hurt us and keep us from getting back up. So learn what you gotta learn, accept that, and then flush it, get rid of it, move on. Okay. And the last one is peace. Peace. Hmm. You are not your wins, you are not your losses. Those two things do not identify you. What identifies you is the fact that you are a child of God.
Mm-hmm.
That is what you are. And just leave it at that. Stop your racing mind.
Dang, that's a tough one, though. Just to say, all right, ego, get out of the way. You're not the wins. You're not all the success that you've had. That's not you. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you've had a failure, that's not you either.
If your failures are not you, Church, then what are you doing saying that your successes are you?
That's right. Yeah.
They're not. It's a moment in time.
But the challenge with that is how do you avoid the thought of I never win because it's not mine. I can do away with the problem as a business owner in general is the rewards. So you have your, oh, why am I having drawn brain fart? So rewarding yourself. Oh, leverage. So leverage, the leverages that you present, like I can live and die by leverages. If I don't do that, like that's ultimately how I stayed motivated a couple years back was I leveraged everything. I said, if I don't do this task, like I did one time where I was going to give one of my coaches a car of mine, like a very expensive car of mine, if I didn't hire a comfort specialist by a certain date.
Wow.
So I said, all right, this is the leverage. If I don't do that, then I'll give you this car. And I did it easily. But then she was like, okay, what's your reward if you do that? And I'm like, I'm not worried about the reward. I'm worried about the next leverage. That's the problem. You're not rewarding yourself. And so I'm like, but I don't, as a business owner, I struggle with the reward. I think a lot of business owners struggle with rewarding themselves. So I guess with peace, if I don't have the win and I don't have the losses, do we still get the dopamine drip there?
Okay, yeah. And I love that you're asking this question because, and forgive me, but the answer is provided in copious amounts in the book, Something to Give, right? So definitely go to brighamdickinson.com to get that. But here's the thing. So you know how we were talking before we got onto this podcast about your friend who had a picture of a boat and,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and he was motivated by that boat? And I said, okay, cool. Yep. But once he gets the boat, then what? With these temporal rewards that we give ourselves, we're always, it's always the next fix. We're right. constantly going after the next fix. And as soon as we get that fix, now we're going for another fix. Until we realize that it's not about the fix, right? It's about finding joy and happiness and helping other people get to where we are. Okay. It's about bringing them with us.
Now, are we settling at that point? Like,
what do you mean settle? No, we don't settle.
Okay. So if that is what is motivating a person, an individual, like if the next toy or the next like accomplishment, because I grew up poor, dirt poor. And the challenge that I have is I don't have necessarily a lot of people. I have friends that are amazing in my inner circle now who are very successful in life, and they have things that are that I could just dream to have. But growing up, I remember I just wanted to get out of the trailer park. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I get where I'm at, and it's like, all right, I'm successful, more successful than I ever had imagined. And if I compared myself to what I grew up thinking about, I am quote unquote successful. I guess if we were always motivated by that next thing, and we don't do that, we don't keep motivating ourselves by that next thing anymore, does that not add to some depression? Or
it could if you don't replace it. Yeah, mm-hmm. It could if you don't replace it. And that's the goal here, right? So we're constantly proving ourselves.
So becoming almost a mentor at the end goal, like your end game is becoming a mentor.
You got it. So have you ever heard of Rambam's ladder?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go, no,
you
go.
So the top tier of that ladder, okay, there's many different ways to give. You can give them money and they're good. You feed them for a day, you feed them for a lifetime, right? You've heard that saying before. But the highest way of giving at the top of Rambam's ladder is the gift of self-reliance, where you actually show them how to be where you are, how to get where you're at. Let me tell you a quick story.
And that's the reward that you give as you get as being a mentor. Yeah.
You got it. Yeah. Yeah. Coaches and players. Okay. There's coaches, players, and fans. You never want to be a fan. Be a coach or a player or a coach, never a fan, okay? We don't want to sit and watch on the sidelines. We either want to be on the game or teaching people how to play the game. That's where we find fulfillment, okay? So basically, we're transitioning from player to coach, all right? Let me just tell you a quick story. I don't know if you're familiar with the fact that I love Spartan racing. Are you familiar with Spartan races?
That's the ones where you get shocked while you're in the water?
Okay, that's a different kind of race. That's a tough mudder or something like that.
Yeah, okay. That's what I'm thinking.
Spartan race is an obstacle course race. Yeah, you're climbing up ropes, you're carrying buckets of rocks up a hill. There's 5,000 feet of elevation gain. Okay, it's really hot. It's a half marathon or a full marathon. It's a crazy race, okay? I do these all the time. In fact, in 2019, I did 10 of them.
Wow.
The reason why I did 10 of them is because I wanted to get on the podium. I wanted to get for third, second, first, what have you. In that year, I took fourth twice. How's that for a kick in the pants?
Right.
Brutal. Super brutal. And so one of those races, I invited a bunch of business owners with me. One of them is Crandall. He's a heating cooling. He owns a heating cooling company here in Salt Lake City, Utah. And he weighs 250 pounds, 6'5".
Yeah.
He lost 40 pounds to get ready for this race.
Wow.
Freaking awesome. Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was awesome. I was still concerned about him because he's such a big guy.
Yeah.
His DNA just, it's tough on him. It was going to be really, whatever's tough on my body is going to be absolutely much, that much more difficult with his body, right? So I get done with my race. I take fourth. I get over real quick. I get some liquids in my body and I run back out on the course to make sure that he gets in, right? I said to him, I'm going to run back out on the course to make sure everybody gets in. Truth is. So I get out to the 5-mile mark and I see him coming through the trees and he did not look good. And I said, dude, how are you doing? How are things? He's like, I'm okay. I really want to be there.
Yeah.
And I said, you're probably the last one through here. And he said, yeah, thanks for bringing it up, you freaking jerk. And I was like, hey, it's fine. Don't worry about it. I'm trying to recover from what I just said. Foot in my mouth. I said, look, there's a bit of a loop here. I'll meet you back here at the 8-mile mark. And we'll go in together. He said, sounds great. Remember, he started this race at 10:30 in the morning. He did not get to the 8-mile mark until 5 in the evening.
Wow.
In fact, when he gets there, he says, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're still here. Now in my head, I said the same thing. I can't believe I'm still here either. And so he was like, Brigham, I'm done.
Yeah, I'm spent.
I don't want to be here anymore. And so I said, look, bro, you're almost done. This thing is over. Okay, you're still upright. You're obviously not done. I could tell he wanted he wanted to punch me, right? But he's too tired, right? Yeah. I said, look, we're going to do this together. It's just up over this hill. There's a couple more ascents. And then after that, it's going to be all downhill from there. It's going to be fantastic. And so I'm just talking him through the last few miles, right? Last 5 miles. And 7 o'clock, 7:30 at night, sun was going down. He's about to go across the finish line. In fact, all the other business owners there cheer him on. And he starts sprinting, right? I could barely keep up with him when he gets to the finish line. He crosses the finish line. He puts his hand on my shoulder and says, Brigham, I got to tell you something. I said, what's that? He said, I never planned to finish this race.
Whoa.
What? What do you mean you never planned to finish this race? He says, I plan to go 8 miles. I trained for 8 miles. I figured it'd be good for my first race. Thanks for helping me finish.
Wow.
The way I felt in that moment was worth 1,000 podiums.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So for leaders, what we don't realize, it's not about winning that makes us happy. It's not just about winning. It's about the people we bring with us to the finish line. And that's what we're doing. That's what brings happiness. Bring them with you. Yeah. Watch what happens.
Dang. That's good. Man, Brigham, I appreciate you hanging out with me. I hate that Josh had to, he had technical difficulties, had to leave, but he's out. Sucks to be him.
He can listen. He can listen.
He can listen.
Put it at live speed, you'll get it all.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, I really do appreciate you hanging out. We're definitely going to come back and discuss this. If you haven't ordered it yet while you're listening to this show, go to brighamdickinson.com and get your book pre-ordered. We're July 26th here reading or recording this, and it comes out what, September?
September 19th, yes.
23. Okay. Huge shout out to you and everything that you bring. Every time we talk and hang out at a conference, I really enjoy it. I just wanted you to know that I appreciate everything that you do for everybody.
Thank you.
Absolutely. If anybody has any questions at all, don't hesitate to reach out to Brigham and his team. Reach out to me. If you have any questions about Power Selling Pros, don't hesitate to reach out to me. I've already told you my experience with them and Connor and our support team as Connor's moved up the different levels. It's been great. So if you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out to me about that. But with that being said, I hope y'all have a wonderful and safe week until we talk again next time. Thank you for hanging out with us on the Service Business Mastery Podcast. We'll see you later.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Service Business Mastery. Now that you are equipped with essential business advice from this impactful conversation, you are one step closer to becoming the successful owner of your dreams. If this episode has been helpful to your business journey, don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a rating, and share it with other owners as well. Visit servicebusinessmastery.com to learn more.